Some of us eat to live. Others live to eat. The rest of us, well, the rest of us have lost control of eating. This loss of control leads us to ask, can one bring an eating disorder back into order? Out there, you are tuned into the 951st edition of the Food Chain Radio Program right here on your local news talk radio station. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Montevideo who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with Aaron Shore on the boards. Aaron.
Yes.
Do you think you can bring an eating disorder back into order?
With some help, yes, absolutely.
All right, good, we're off. Folks, some of us eat to live, others live to eat. The rest of us, well, the rest of us have lost control of eating. How many people have lost control of eating? Well, estimates suggest 30 million people, give or take. That's about 10% of the population have actually suffered from a clinically significant eating disorder at some point in their life. These eating disorders include anorexia nervosa, binge disorder, and bulimia nervosa, and of course other things that really haven't even been categorized yet. Contrary to what some might think, eating disorders are not a fad or a lifestyle choice. They are real, complex, and devastating conditions that have significant consequences for one's health and productivity. These eating disorders lead us to ask, to what extent do we suffer from eating disorders? Who is most vulnerable to losing control of their eating? How does one address a loved one who has an eating disorder? How does one treat an eating disorder? And can one bring an eating disorder back into order? Here to help us find an answer, we have Dr. Elizabeth Esselin, who is the director of the Lotus Collaborative Recovery Center in Santa Cruz, California. Dr. Elizabeth, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hello.
Now, how did you go about discovering this mission in life? What was your epiphany moment, that moment when you woke up and thought, I know where I'm going with my life?
What a great question. I would say that, you know, I was working with women when I was doing my doctoral training, and I just kept hearing over and over and over women talking about this great dissatisfaction with themselves, and it kept coming up around food and their bodies. And it just really made me pay attention. Something's really going wrong here. And so as I started paying more and more attention to that and my own experiences of being an athlete, it really made a lot of sense of, okay, this is something we have to do and do well if we're really going to help women heal. And it's not only women, as we know, you know, lots of men, mm-hmm. transgender individuals are also suffering from it, but it's been predominantly a women's issue.
And so you started the Lotus Collaborative Recovery Center.
Yes, I did.
Why the Lotus? Why do you call it the Lotus Collaborative?
Oh my goodness. Well, I was, I knew I wanted to bring a healing center here in Santa Cruz. I actually, used to run centers down in LA and I've opened other centers, but I knew that Santa Cruz was specifically lacking a treatment center. So I moved here. My family lives here and with the explicit purpose to open the Lotus Collaborative. So I was trying to figure out the name. I'm driving down Pacific Drive and I see the Ohm Gallery with their beautiful Lotus flowers lamps. And I was like, Lotus, yes.
Look, you look around and you see what you see, and this is the community, and there you go.
There it is.
Just on a parenthetical, it was pointed out to me that the recovery centers are kind of focused or concentrated on both coasts. Why is that?
I know. Isn't that interesting? It really is.
Maybe more people on the coast or something, but that seems to be where the recovery centers are. So just a kind of a parenthetical. We always ask Dr. Esselin, who pays the way?
Yes, the clients pay the way. We are for the people, by the people. You know, a lot of our staff have personally recovered from an eating disorder. They've done the work themselves, and we are consumer driven. We really want to find a way that supports people in their path to recovery and health.
Okay, and if you don't, they don't.
Exactly.
Okay, good. Also with us today we have Tracy Corpella. Did I pronounce that right?
Yes, it's
Corpella.
Corpella. Mm-hmm. Tracy, you're part of the marketing effort at the Lotus Collaborative. Now, do you have an experience with this? The doctor said that a lot of our staff have direct experience with eating disorders. Do you have that experience?
I do have some. When I was younger, I suffered from obsessive compulsive disorder, and it was very tough. My family really had no idea what was going on, nor did I. I got treatment for it, but it did turn into a little bit of an eating disorder as well. Luckily, it did not go full-blown, but I've always been very connected to women's mental health because I understand how tough it is and how good it feels to overcome it. So when I found this position, I definitely felt connected to it and moved out here from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's a move. Well, let me ask you this. Did you know of any eating disorders in the heartland of Wisconsin?
I did, actually.
There were,
yes,
there.
Yes.
Okay, so mm-hmm. there were a few of them. Mm-hmm. Well, let's go straight to the disorders themselves so people know what the heck mm-hmm. we're talking about here. There are seem to be three major ones and then a category of others not defined. So mm-hmm. let's start with anorexia nervosa. I think most people have heard about that associate it with starving yourself to get death, mm-hmm. I guess. Mm-hmm. Doctor?
Well, it's really about... you know, it's like minimizing. It's trying to minimize life. It's trying to minimize your presence. It's trying to minimize emotions. So in many
wow.
ways, yes, it is about...
It's kind of like trying to become a mouse.
A mouse, yeah. Yeah, it's really... you can talk about control. That's kind of a simplistic way. It is about control, but really, what are you trying to control for? And a lot of times, people who struggle with anorexia are trying to rid themselves of really being in feelings and feeling imperfect or feeling vulnerable. So by focusing on calories and food and, you know, that constant perpetual carrot of maybe I can just do it right this time, it becomes this obsession that really fills up somebody's life in a actually interesting, satisfying way, because it reduces some of the chaos and it gives order and predictability.
Oh.
But then over time, what happens is the eating, you know, anorexia becomes your oppressor. So the diet itself then, you know, which once soothed you, then becomes something that is now guiding you and you have no power over.
So it now controls you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, the physical act, of course, just means that people focus on every single calorie nervosa means you just afraid of calories.
Yeah, it's really scary. I mean, somebody who struggles with anorexia will be thinking for hours about if they have to go and be around people and there's going to be food at an event. They'll be, you know, worrying,
I do that
worrying,
too, but
worrying.
It's the other way around.
Yeah. Yeah, they're really worried about, you know, am I going to have to eat? And really, like, looking at food as the enemy.
And I guess opposed to that would be binge-eating disorders?
What,
yes. Binge eating?
So too little on anorexia, and then the other side of the spectrum is too much.
Mm-hmm.
So this is somebody who... I like to think about eating disorders in terms of their spiritual content or their psychological content. This is somebody who, interestingly enough, you know, people say, oh, anorexia has too much control and binge eaters have too little control. But really, you're out of control no matter where you are. But for somebody who struggles with binge eating, it's a lot of times shame-induced and really just craving and trying to get that satisfaction, that fulfillment, that the need met, and a lot of times turning to food for comfort. But the problem is that actually, you know, you'll find when working with people with binge eating, they never actually taste the food because they're in such a fight-or-flight mode because they feel so much shame and guilt that they actually aren't really present and never really feel satisfied.
Now, this is a lot different than the obesity epidemic.
Not really.
No, it's not.
That's the thing. It's like, it's really hard for me personally to watch The Biggest Loser because, you know, we make this grand thing of like, oh, just diet and exercise and we can really motivate somebody to heal it. But until you really address the psychological factors that are driving somebody to eat or choose the foods that they're choosing, it's going to keep happening.
Wow. And really quickly, what is the final one? And that would be the bulimia.
Bulimia nervosa, yes. Mm-hmm. So binging, purging.
It's kind of a combination of both.
It's somewhere in the middle.
Wow. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for the day. And today we're talking about eating disorders. Oh, I know you probably think about it. You've heard about it, but what is it? We have with us Dr. Elizabeth Esselin. She's the director of the Lotus Collaborative Recovery Center, Santa Cruz, California. Also, Tracy Corpella, who's the marketing coordinator at the Lotus Center. And, of course, we have you. You are invited to participate today. The phone number, 831-479-1080. 831-479-1080. Can one pull an eating disorder back into order? Right back. Do stay tuned.
Get this. You can earn a 5, 6, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city. You can be old or young, rich or poor, married or single. You can rent, lease, or own. You can farm small fruits on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, flowers on steep wooded hillsides, vegetables in city green belts, ornamentals in neighborhoods of million-dollar homes. There's only one catch. You must compete with other farmers for the consumer dollars. You can compete with others and win the consumer dollars with the help of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for profit in or near the city. MetroFarm is the Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner that will guide you step by step through the planning and development of your very own income-generating metropolitan farm. Abraham Lincoln said the greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living on a small parcel of land. Get in on the future today. Get a copy of MetroFarm at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, they say 30 million of us here in the United States suffer some kind of eating disorder during the course of our life. You've heard about them, anorexia nervosa, binge eating, bulimia nervosa. But here's one you may not have heard about. It seems very interesting to me, being the host of the Food Chain Radio Program. Dr. Esselin, what is the orthorexia? What is
orthorexia,
that?
Orthorexia, yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's not officially recognized in the DSM. However, it's really, really important, especially to areas such as Santa Cruz. So basically, orthorexia is the fascination with eating pure or clean. And, you know, everybody wants to eat healthy, and that's why, you know, tons of money is dumped into research, and that's fine. But really what happens for somebody who struggles with orthorexia is that they become consumed with the pursuit for clean or healthy eating. And what happens over time is the diet becomes more and more constricting. There's almost a sense of kind of when you can have that perfect day, that self-esteem and that pure feeling that comes from it. But basically it's described as like a religious approach to eating.
It's kind of the same process then, whereas one enters into the other conditions like anorexia nervosa, mm-hmm. or whatnot. You start kind of small and you pursue these courses of action, and then the courses of action take over.
Totally. You know, almost all eating disorders begin with an attempt to eat more healthy. They begin with a diet. Not all diets create eating disorders. However, most people who end up with an eating disorder started from a very nice intention to just really pay more attention to the way that they eat. But then over time, it spirals out of control.
Wow. Well, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking eating disorders. And if you have any questions about eating disorders, or you know somebody with an eating disorder and you want to figure out how to at least talk to them or bring their attention to the fact that they're out there, you might pick up your phone and join us. We have somebody who can really help you out. That would be Dr. Elizabeth Esselin. She is the director of the Lotus Collaborative Recovery Center here in Santa Cruz, California. And so let's launch off here. So to what extent do we suffer from eating disorders? They say 30 million of us. A lot of people. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one-tenth of us. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of people. Is it really like that?
Oh, yeah. Well, Okay, it's even worse. Let me break it down, because most people would be on the spectrum of just engaging in disordered eating. So before it goes into a full-blown eating disorder, which then...
They're heading down the trail.
That's right. So they are heading on the trail of where you become more preoccupied with your body and weight and food. Most people don't have a healthy relationship with food or their body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So once you start down that path, I guess everybody's on that path, right? I mean, it gets right down to it. We're all concerned about the shape of our body and the fact that we don't have the right kind of body I would never make it in the end, National Basketball Association, because I'm not tall enough. So,
right.
And so on. So we all have some kind of preoccupation with the fact that we're not built the way we want to be built.
Right. And we've really lost touch with how to eat intuitively, how you are instinctively born. You know, it's kind of, I look at my toddler and he has a natural rhythm. He knows what he wants, different food groups, et cetera. He doesn't have all the shoulds or I really shouldn't eat so much or really I'm trying to watch.
I want meat and potatoes.
Yes, he knows what he wants. Sometimes it's a total yogurt bender. He's on a yogurt bender lately, but he knows that he needs it. And as adults, we have so many shoulds and rules and we are not really tuning into what works for us as an individual and really trusting, oh, that food really feels good for me, or, you know, I want more, I want less, I want pleasure food, I want, you know, I want something that's crunchy or green. So that's really what we're trying to do when we're working with individuals who struggle with eating disorders.
Is listen to your body,
listen
not
to your
mind.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, who's most vulnerable to eating disorders, women or men?
Everyone,
yeah, but there's, it's a...
Yeah, if right now it's women, definitely. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, if you want to look at, you know, what's the standard to really become a woman in our society? It's to be thin, it's to be modest, it's to be nice, and it's to really, you know, dedicate all resources to appearance. So that is the standard for femininity. For masculinity, it's to really...
Well, it's becoming for masculinity, too, with the whole metrosexual thing as well, right?
Right. Well, yeah. For men, it's like show absolute control over emotions. So all these are just completely... you can't live up to these standards. It's not possible.
Well, let me read something to you that I found while cruising around trying to figure out exactly this question. And I think it was from Wikipedia, so you can take that for whatever it's worth. And I quote, "There is evidence to suggest that it is women in the Western world who are at the highest risk of developing eating disorders. And the degree of Westernization increases the risk." Now, I had an occasion to spend some time with the Shipibo Indians in the Amazon Basin, way up on the Rio Ucayali River. And they were beautiful, they were healthy, and they didn't appear to have any kind of eating disorders because there's only there what mm-hmm. you could eat. You eat mm-hmm. fish out of the river, you eat what you grow, and that's it. And mm-hmm. But also, there's nobody putting upon them what they should look like.
Mm-hmm.
And is that really what's going on here, is that we're... The more westernized we become, the more put upon we are becoming mm-hmm. As to how we should look.
Absolutely. I mean, gosh, you really bring up a really great point. There's a known study called the Fiji Study, and, you know, there was very little incidence of eating disorders, you know, as we recognize. And when we introduced Western culture through radio, television, media, then all of a sudden, within the first year, eating disorder reports skyrocketed and doubled and tripled. And as you know, within 5 years, you had a society who's really struggling with this. So, yeah.
That's Fiji?
Yeah, Fiji,
wow.
The Fiji study. So, absolutely. You know, you think about our culture, a lot of the healing work that we do with eating disorders is getting somebody to slow down and connect with themselves, connect with community, connect with a greater purpose other than I should be perfect. I should be producing more output. I should be not having emotions. I should be, you know, all these different standards that really happen in the high pressure in Western society.
And I'd like to talk about some of the, to me, that would be, it really helped me understand, just considering that thought about the more westernized we become,
mm-hmm.
the more nervous we become about how we look.
Yeah.
And there's so much in the media forcing us right. to want to look one way or another. And I think about the runway models that look mm-hmm. like they've been on heroin for like 7 months or something. Mm-hmm. They're just rail thin with mm-hmm. sunken eyes. And I mm-hmm. think, do they really want us to look like that? And if they do, and if people are influenced by that, then that starts them right down the path then, doesn't it?
Yes. I mean, it's a disease of never enough. Right? That's what we're all really struggling with, whether it's work or perfectionism or a beauty, you know. I mean, it's you're not okay as you are. So you need these things that are outside of you that you need to perpetually strive for in order to finally become okay. So, you know, absolutely what we market to women in the media, you know, is here's this unobtainable standard of beauty that is not really natural to women's bodies.
Right. There are some other triggers listed.
Yes.
We'll go through them quickly. Medical conditions.
Yes. Yes. Oh, you know, I mean, one of the probably lesser known would be polycystic ovarian syndrome. Yes, PCOS. A lot of times you'll find a woman who struggles with PCOS. It's a hormone condition that can really mess with satiety, hunger, the types of food you crave, etc.
It's always those hormones, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hey, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here with Dr. Elizabeth Esselin, the director of Lotus Collaborative Recovery Center. Also, Tracy Corpella is with us, and also you're with us. Phone numbers today, 831-479-1080, 479-1080. If you have questions about eating disorders, if you know of somebody who has an eating disorder and don't know how to approach them, pick up your phone and join us, 831-479-1080. The question we're working with today, can one bring an eating disorder back into order? 30 million of us suffer from an eating disorder. Can we get control? Right back. Hey, we're back, folks. Michael Olson here. Had an interesting occurrence last evening. We were dinner with some friends, and we were talking about eating disorders. And my friends had a young daughter that they raised. And when we were talking about this, the mother said, I fixed it. I just went in there and I took out all of the mirrors from my daughter's room. And that was it.
That was it.
That was Dr. Esselin. Why would you do something like that?
Oh, my goodness. Well, get rid of the mirrors. Get rid of the scales. Get rid of the shoulds. Really, all the standards. Get rid of the clothes that don't fit, that you keep feeling like you should live up to. Get more focused on relationships. Get more focused with who you are and connecting with mm-hmm. with self and others and the world around you. So get away from kind of that navel gazing that really produces so much misery.
I always thought that the people who are truly beautiful are the people who are beautiful from the inside out.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You can always tell that person, right?
Mm-hmm.
That person who's connected with who they are, their purpose. You can tell they're humble, they're grounded. That's really the kind of beauty I would want in this world.
Well, speaking of beautiful, we have a phone caller. And you can join us on the phones, too. The phone number today here on the Food Chain, 831-479-1080. The topic, eating disorder. And we have Nick on the line. Nick, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you. Good morning, Mike. Your guest, I know the answer, but I'm kind of bringing it up as a...
But I don't know the question.
Do you have a longevity lounge at your rehab?
No, she probably doesn't know what you're talking about, Nick. Thank you.
Correct. I'm bringing it up as a subject. I'm perfectly convinced that minerals will help you when you slow down to ground you and be...
Well, that's a good question. What about diet and a complete diet in dealing with mental conditions relating to food? Mm-hmm. What about the right kind of diet?
Mm-hmm. You know... the research is really just catching up with mental illness and disorders. I mean, we still don't even have a accurate kind of brain mapping and location in the brain of what's happening. So the research is still coming, but absolutely, I think they're starting to get information about how artificial stuff that we put in food can influence, like, you know,
ADHD, so that could be one of the triggers then is the bad things they put in food.
Potentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, the message that we should eat food closer to source is never a bad message. You know, nature did a really good job of creating us and creating the things that we need. So absolutely, it doesn't hurt to go back to things. It doesn't hurt to go back to nature.
Another condition listed, possible condition as a trigger, was ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
Attention deficit disorder. I'm sure it could be something I suffered from most of my life, no doubt about it. But would that be something that you see in the course of your work?
Yes, absolutely. I think it influences a lot. You know, you think of that manic pace and that kind of, it's really bringing in a lot of information and having a hard time of kind of filtering what you should attend to. So people who struggle with ADHD, when I think about it, they actually have a lot more receptor sites and they're taking in a lot more information. So really slowing down and attuning to what you need to focus on can be really hard. So absolutely, that pace could contribute, again, to being out of order with yourself, which then you could turn to food as a way to try and control the chaos. But really what we see a lot of times, you know, depression, anxiety, perfectionism, low self-esteem, socially isolated, trauma, a lot of those you'll see a high correlation.
And that would lead me to the next question, of course, which is the relationship between these eating disorders and PTSD, and especially young girls that have had adverse sexual encounters. Mm-hmm. And which would relate to the next one, which is foster girls.
Mm-hmm.
I guess young ladies, young girls who have been essentially abandoned and then abused.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, all sorts of trauma. So all not only sexual trauma, not only neglect, but emotional abuse, verbal abuse, neglect, just even growing up in a home where you're not really attended to or attuned mm-hmm. to. So, but yes, in trauma, absolutely, there's a high correlation between trauma and eating disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the inevitable substance abuse.
Oh, yeah. That's always fun. It's a lot of times what we'll see is it's kind of a whack-a-mole. Sometimes when we're working with somebody who, you know, we get their eating disorder kind of under tabs, sometimes you'll see them, you know, compulsively start shopping, you know, turn to drugs, alcohol, sex, work.
It's like you're putting a bead of mercury on the table and trying to put your thumb on it, right?
Yeah.
Well, Tracy mentioned the fact that when people come to an eating disorder clinic, you won't take them if they're abusing some kind of substance.
Yeah, well, you really want to deal with somebody when they're kind of in their mind, because, you know, we really have to kind of get to what's underneath. When we're dealing with the eating disorder, we really need to kind of get in under there. And when you're using substances and you're under the influence, you're not fully present. So absolutely, you know, we need to make sure people are medically stable. So we would send them to a higher level of care if they need, you know, some medical care, or if they need to, you know, be abstinent from drugs or alcohol. But yeah, so when they come to us, we then can really focus in on what's happening with the nutrition and really the emotions.
So that leads us, of course, to the next question, which is, people who are suffering from eating disorders probably don't check themselves into a clinic without some encouragement, right?
Well, it's interesting. If you're a teen, an adolescent, it's almost always your parent. And mm-hmm. So that course of treatment is very different. It's, you know, really wrapped around, you know, the parent forcing somebody to come into treatment. Usually if it's a woman in her mid-20s, there might be some coaxing from other people. But a lot of times it's really, hey, this is making me miserable and I want some help. So we have a lot of people who are self-referred. But, you know, eating disorders are really expanding, you know, women who are going through menopause or, you know, that's something that's really happening. And we're becoming more and more aware of these crucial life transitions that then we'll see eating disorders pop up.
Mm-hmm. And those transitions kind of provide you with the impetus to take that path down the road to trouble then.
Right. Misery is a motivator. So, you know, it's kind of these transitions create kind of a loss of navigation and purpose. You try and find the way. If you find a way that boxes you in more and more and then you become miserable, then you get motivated to get some relief and help. And so that's when they call us.
How does one approach a loved one mm-hmm. who's suffering from an eating disorder?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a tough one because if you do that, you're accusing them, right? Well, we're going to have to take a quick break, but that's a question I'd like to pick up when we come back. You have a loved one, a daughter, a son, a good friend, and they're torturing themselves with food.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you approach them and talk with them
mm-hmm.
and help them to see what they are doing so that they can see the need to get some help? This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with Dr. Elizabeth Esselin. She's the director of Lotus Collaborative Recovery Center in Santa Cruz, California. Tracy Corpella, who's the marketing coordinator at the same institution. And you, 831-479-1080, 479-1080. How do you handle your loved ones when you see them with an eating disorder? Do stay tuned. We will be right back. Well, folks, how do you address a loved one who has an eating disorder? Do you push them up against the wall and say, hey, you're way out of line here? What do we do, Dr. Elizabeth?
Straighten up. I would say the guiding principle is truth without judgment. How do you speak what's true but without criticism or judgment?
Oh, yeah.
So you really want to approach somebody and just say, hey, this is what I've seen. You know, I've seen you in the kitchen a lot. I see you go to the bathroom after meals. I see you saying you already ate and you're not eating with us. I see you really concerned and not liking your body and weighing yourself a lot, etc. I see this and I'm worried. And so you come from the personal, like, I worry about this. I want you to have more pleasure.
Isn't that being judgmental, though?
Judgmental is you're wrong.
Okay.
You're wrong and you're bad.
So I'm concerned.
I'm concerned. Okay. I'm seeing this. What's going on for you? Do you feel like this is an issue? Are you struggling with this? How can I support you to get more support? So that would be a guiding principle. A lot of times people with eating disorders almost always say, even though they hate it when somebody comments, especially on appearance, they really wish somebody had said, hey, I see what's happening. And there's a lot of pain that people tried to be polite and didn't really go in and go, hey, I see you're hurting.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, we have Tina on the line. Tina, thank you for tuning in the Food Chain Radio program. For all of you out there, 831-479-1080. Tina, welcome aboard.
Thank you. I've had an eating disorder pretty much my entire life. And I've gone to a program, a 12-step program for eating. And they've always called it a disease. And that always bothered me. I didn't see how it is a disease. I can see the obsessive compulsive behavior. Mm-hmm. I can see that I am building a wall of fat to keep people away from me, to protect myself. I understand that. But I don't understand how it is a disease. Do you believe that it's actually a disease?
Oh, what a great question. I absolutely do not believe it's a disease. You know, I really came into this work and believe what true healing can come from this is listening to the messages that the eating disorder is telling us. It doesn't mean that something is flawed or wrong with the person. It's really a coping skill that began at one time that made a lot of sense. And over time, that coping skill, you know, grew out of control. And, you know, then somebody got caught into the addictive pattern with it. But mm-hmm. It's really just, you know, to take the shame and judgment out of it. You are not a damaged or bad person. You're really trying to work a problem by something that's very familiar, although it no longer works. So let's explore other options that actually will work. So that's a lot of what we focus on when we're doing eating disorder treatment.
Mm-hmm. I have a 2-year-old grandbaby, and I see the obsessive compulsive behavior in this baby already. She's just, all she wants to do is eat.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
wait a minute. Can a 2-year-old I mean, 2-year-olds are hungry.
Mm-hmm.
They're growing.
Mm-hmm.
Can they be?
Yeah.
It's really interesting, taking kind of what we believe about food, and we kind of look at a toddler, you know, for example, my toddler will go through phases where he is super, super hungry. And what I would think, oh, this isn't what he normally eats. He's going through it. But he has, his body has a wisdom that's communicating to him. Our bodies, we're born with these hunger and fullness signals to really help us regulate. And so, you know, it's not quite coming from that compulsive nature. It's really more so our expectations as an adult and what we've been taught to not trust food or not trust our hunger. So really creating space for a child to eat and giving them a variety of foods to choose from and letting that dictate what a child is really wanting is really the best way to work with a child in their eating.
Wow.
Okay.
So, Tina, any more?
Yes. Yeah. No, that's good. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for the call. Really appreciate it. Wow. How do we come to grips with changing behavior? You're a psychologist.
I am.
Your job is to change behavior.
Make it all better.
Make it all better. And there are so many different things happening here.
Yes.
So what is your first step?
Oh, boy. Creating a relationship.
Uh-huh.
You have to be a professional. You have to know. I mean, if you're going to seek treatment, please seek treatment with an expert. And an expert is defined by, you know, doing 10,000 hours of that thing, of wow. that particular work. So this isn't somebody who dabbles in it. This is such a serious disorder. And a lot of times what's healing is counterintuitive. So telling somebody, hey, you look really healthy, or just eat, are actually not helpful. In fact, it goes the opposite direction. Or, but you don't look like you have an eating disorder, can be really triggering. So you really want somebody, especially your therapist and your dietitian, who are well-trained in eating disorders and focus pretty much exclusively on it in order to make some progress.
Okay, so that's step number one.
Step number one, go to an expert.
Step number two is wait till after this break to get step number two. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, if you'd like to join us, you can, but we only have a couple minutes left, 831-479-1080. You can always get more information by going to the Lotus Collaborative, and you can Google that and find it. The Lotus Collaborative. Even if you're in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, you can go to the Lotus Collaborative website and get information. We are talking with Dr. Elizabeth Eslin. She's the director of the Lotus Collaborative, and Tracy Corpella, who's the marketing coordinator. And when we get back, we're going to learn the next step in what it takes to treat eating disorders of all kinds. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson. We will be right back. Well, got to thinking, you know, how important it is to connect with a professional if you do have an eating disorder. But what that really means is that you're connecting with others, because what seems to be the case with eating disorders is you head off down this path that your mind's taking you, and you're not listening to anybody else but your mind. And mm-hmm. your mind's got control of you, and it's leading you on the road to perdition, as it were. Mm-hmm. So connecting with others is hugely important.
It's huge. You know, you can work with an eating disorder by seeing a therapist once a week or a dietitian once a week. One of the reasons why I created the Lotus Collaborative is actually so you can have a healing community. Mm-hmm. Because it's super important to get out of the secrecy and shame that keeps triggering the eating disorder.
It's kind of like a self-imposed closet. Or you
yes.
hiding out in this closet.
You get more and more bound. You feel shame, so then you resort to the behaviors, mm-hmm. etc. So not only having a team, but also having a community, and realizing first off you're not alone, and other people can really understand, but also starting to experience yourself in a really compassionate way. That's, you know, people a lot of times think, oh, I could never go to a group, or, you know, that seems horrible, but that's actually one of the most healing properties that
it's
people
say.
It's kind of
like a 12-step program, right?
It's kind of like, but it's even more. It's mm-hmm. even more community. It's even more connecting. It's more processing. It's getting in there with somebody.
You know, we had a call from Tina who talked about how her granddaughter or grandson 2 years old, was a compulsive eater.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, off mic we were talking about, goodness sakes, that the teen was kind of projecting mm-hmm. herself on that child. And it's almost like what we have to do when we get into these troubles is stop thinking, mm-hmm. thinking, and start tuning in like that two-year-old into mm-hmm. what their body is telling them.
You got it. Absolutely. I mean, stop making it so complicated. You were born with what you need. You were born with this desire to like yourself. I mean, most two-year-olds don't go around and go, oh, I'm not good enough, you know, and also connect with others. Really, you know, don't be afraid of true connection and affection, play, taking time to focus on work or activities, you know, like let's bring it back to the things that we were born to do.
Well, my big question now is, can we pull this back into order? Can we take can one turn an eating disorder back into order? Can you bring order?
Yes, if you spend the time to get to know what the sacred message is. So it's a sacred message that it's really, if you want to look at it as a messenger of helping, you know, the eating disorder came about to try and protect you. It came about to really try and help you. And so we have to kind of look at, oh, wow, okay, every time that I feel shame, I withdraw, and then I go home and I turn to food because I'm longing for comfort. I'm longing to be seen for who I really am. So you have to kind of look at the messenger and go, oh, here it is. This is exactly why I'm going home, and thank you for that, but let me try another route. Let me not try binging and purging. Let me try speaking my feelings and connecting.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Now, do you eat to live or live to eat? Dr. Esalen.
Oh, man. What a great question. I pretty much try and enjoy my life, and sometimes food is pleasure, and sometimes food is just to help me sustain and be connected.
Tracy?
I would agree with Liz.
Oh, well, that's an answer. Well, folks, what about you? We want to thank Dr. Esalen and Tracy for joining us today from the Lotus Collaborative. We want to thank you all for tuning in the Food Chain Radio program. And we want you to especially remember Michael Olson's third law of the food chain: cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.